This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Ask Lisa, a podcast to help people understand the psychology of parenting. Psychologist Dr. Lisa Damore, author of two New York Times best-selling parenting books, takes your questions. And I'm co-host Rena Ninen, a journalist and mom of two. Some of what we talk about comes from raising children ourselves. Most of the time, I'll be getting answers to your parenting questions. So send your questions to Ask Lisa at drlisademore.com. Episode 76, How and When Do I Tell My Kids Their Grandma Is Dying? Well, there seems like some hope with spring around the corner.
There does. Oh, Rena, to have the windows open is making my days so much better. Yeah. I love fresh air so much.
I'm just thrilled that they're hopefully getting rid of daylight savings time, so...
You know, that would be a wonderful thing. It is ridiculous, and it makes my family so miserable.
You were saying this once on an Instagram Live that you can tell, like, kids are just a total mess when they lose that 1 hour of sleep.
Well, and mostly you just feel so bad for their teachers, you know, sending them to school when you know
true.
That they're kind of a wreck.
So true, so true. Speaking of time and how valuable it is and how much we've realized that in this pandemic, we got a letter asking about grief. And when do you let someone know that their grandparents are dying? I'm going to read you this letter, Lisa. Dear Dr. Lisa, my kids 10 and 12 are lucky to have a close relationship with their Nana, my husband's mother. We live locally, and Nana's been a big part of their lives, including regular visits. The past few years have been a roller coaster of cancer diagnosis, surgery, chemo that is working, and chemo that is not working. Treatment options are now exhausted. Nana has recently entered home hospice care. Right now, she's generally feeling, looking, acting herself, but we adults know that time grows short, and at some point in the coming weeks or months, we will all have to say goodbye. Dr. Lisa, would you please offer guidance for breaking this news to my children? Should we wait until there are unmistakable physical signs of progressing illness, or start talking about Nana's prognosis right away? Additionally, my husband and I will be on the front lines of end-of-life caregiving, and it may be difficult or impossible to shield our children from the realities of Nana's final illness. Should we even try? We would so benefit from your steady, calm perspective on grief and grieving alongside precocious middle grade kids. Likewise, suggestions of books to read together or separately are very welcome. Thank you. Do you know what got to me about this is I think it's something all of us will have to deal with.
Yep. This is the normal course of events. And something we all need to be prepared to help our kids through.
So where does she begin?
Well, my inclination is to be honest and to really be upfront about it, because at 10 and 12 especially, kids are picking up a lot of information, you know, and if this woman has already been moved into home hospice care, you know, she may... in many ways, look and feel like the Nana they remember. But if they know her as well as this letter writer says they do, they have to be aware that something is different at minimum. And what happens when kids become aware that something is changing or different, and yet the adults aren't saying anything about it, they start to think, wow, like, why can't we talk about this? What am I not aware of that makes this something that even my parents can't bring up with me? Mm. And so there's no downside besides their sadness to telling them the truth, that grandma is sick and there's nothing anymore that doctors can do to help her. The doctors have done everything they can. And she will die from what has made her sick. I think that may be the place to start.
Mm. I mean, I'm curious about why you don't shield them. Because you say they're going to pick up on this. They're going to know. It's almost worse that you don't talk about it.
Yeah, because it is part of life. And, you know, maybe one of the things that's so strange about coming out of this pandemic is that we've had this very bizarre, completely unusual landscape around illness and death and disease and fear. And what we have to remember is that people coming to, you know, a point in their life where either they get sick or they're dying from old age or some combination of the both, this is how it's always been. And this is very much part of what it means to be human. And what we want always in caring for our kids is to lead the way in showing them that hard things are part of life. There are ways we can make them more bearable. Part of how we make those things more bearable is that we talk about them. We are forthright about them. We are mindful of how much anybody can tolerate at any given time. But that sort of turning and facing it quality that I think the parents may want to use now makes it all less frightening to children. When we are hiding from things that are expectable parts of life, when we are so cautious and anxious about them, and our kids can tell, it actually all becomes more frightening. Mm-hmm. But what this family's up against is the kids are going to be really, really sad. And I think none of us want to say anything to our children that we know are going to make them really, really sad.
Yeah. And I think sometimes that's why the instinct is sort of shield them for as long as you can and don't say anything. But you're saying that's actually worse.
It is. But it's interesting, Rena, the way you put it, it makes me think about, where's that instinct coming from? Because I think you're right. I think our instinct is like, don't tell the kids, like they don't need to know, they're happy. Why would I ruin their day? But whether we mean for it to be the case or not, I think sometimes it's the parent protecting themselves in that moment, not protecting the child. Because, Rena, you know as a parent, like when your kid's upset, it's awful, right?
Yeah,
it's painful to you.
Yeah.
And so I really feel for this letter writer because they actually are getting it coming and going. They're losing a parent mm-hmm. who they love, mm-hmm. and they have a lot of sadness about that for sure. And they're also going to need to help their kids navigate their sadness. So, mm-hmm. you know, we use the term sandwich generation for lots of things, mm-hmm. but we could definitely say this parent's in an emotional sandwich, right, of having to deal with their own feelings about loss and grief, and then also do as good a job as possible in helping the kids deal with loss and grief. And I have all the empathy in the world for the parent being like, you know what? I don't want to eat this whole sandwich all at once. Like, I'm dealing with my own side of this. I don't know that I want to rush into my kid's grief. If I can hold it at bay or delay it, I certainly understand the instinct.
I want to get into sort of the caretaking aspect and everything, but I want to ask you, when you see kids going through grief, and I'm sure it's different based on age, what do you think parents don't think about and where they miss the mark on helping them cope with grief?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, we have very different guidance age by age because sometimes the questions that are very high on a parent's mind are very different from the questions that are high on a child's mind. So these kids are 10 and 12. So they, in all likelihood, understand the permanence of death, understand that a dead person can't feel things, you know, isn't going to be, you know, their body won't be working anymore, that when you're gone, you're gone. But younger kids don't always have that understanding. And so, especially when we're telling children under the age of 5 about death, we often have to be very, very explicit around things like, you know, that plant we had that died and it stopped working and there was nothing we could do to bring it back. Well, the human body works that way too. Or, you know, that pet we had that died and we said goodbye and we never saw that pet again. We just held that pet in our hearts. Well, that happens with people too. So with the little kids, we have to be mindful of, they just don't get it. Like they just don't really understand. Even with 10 and 12-year-olds, and honestly, even with 30 and 40-year-olds, the permanence of death is actually pretty hard for people to wrap their heads around. You know, there's such beautiful poetry about this idea of like, maybe the person's just in the other room or not, or going to come back soon. You know, that it's so human to ward off the fullness of the reality. And we have to make room for kids to do that as well. You know, at 10 and 12, they may really need time to take in the permanence, which is an argument for telling them sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm. We're going to pause, take a quick break. On the other side, I want to ask you about how often you think kids should be visiting dying grandparents, and also your sense of, based on age group, how kids process death. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Ask Lisa podcast.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. I love that my kids are in middle school because they're independent and they can do things on their own. But there are some things I just have to nag and nag and nag. I got Greenlight as a motivator. It's this fabulous debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and savings, while kids and teens are really able to build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. I love it because now they're taking out the trash, doing the chores that I want them to do. With the Greenlight app, my kids are learning how to save, even invest, and also spend wisely, thanks to the games that teach money skills in a really fun and accessible way. So millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's easy, it's convenient for parents to raise financially smart kids, and for families to navigate life together. So sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/askalisa. That's greenlight.com/askalisa to try Greenlight for free. greenlight.com/askalisa. So I finally got my laundry room organized where all of the things on the shelves are in nice little containers. And I am so thrilled I don't have those plastic laundry jugs. I have switched to EarthBreeze, the eco sheets that are just like dryer sheets, but it's ultra-concentrated, liquidless laundry detergent. EarthBreeze is tough on stains and odors while really being kind to the planet and your skin. I love that the eco sheets are dermatologist-tested, hypoallergenic, free of bleach dyes and parabens. These tiny sheets can stop millions of detergent jugs from entering our ecosystem. In fact, 500 million detergent jugs end up in landfills and oceans every year. Right now, our listeners can receive 40% off of EarthBreeze. That's right, 40% off just by going to earthbreeze.com/askalisa. That's earthbreeze.com/askalisa to cut out single-use plastic in your laundry room and claim 40% off your subscription. earthbreeze.com/askalisa. Well, I have said goodbye to bad bras. You know what I'm talking about. The ones where the underwire sticks out, where the bra straps keep falling down, where you just don't get the support you want. I am obsessed with Honey Love. I have tried these bras and I absolutely love them because they feel so good on. I got the crossover bra, which has a little bit of mesh. It's got the comfort and support in the back that I also love. So if you're tired of bras that cause bulging in the back, the straps that fall off, Honey Love's bras are designed with back-smoothing fabric that actually prevents that bra bulge. They've really become a staple in my wardrobe. I love trying all of the different options. So treat yourself to the best bra on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/askalisa. Our exclusive link will give you 20% off. honeylove.com/askalisa. And after you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. We hope you'll support our show and tell them we sent you. Honeys, you deserve this.
Welcome back to the Ask Lisa podcast. We got a letter from a parent asking about how do you tell kids that their grandparent is dying? Lisa, what, you know, these, in this letter, these, her children are middle schoolers, obviously capable of processing things far differently than maybe a toddler. How do you deal with grief and explaining death based on age?
So if we think then about the middle school group, you know, our kids who are well over age 5, They know what it is. I think we want to be straightforward. And I think we really want to follow their lead in terms of how much they can tolerate at a time. So I do think it's important to be forthright with these kids, to give them time to really be able to say goodbye to their grandmother. You know, one of the things I've sometimes heard is that people aren't really clear with kids, or think kids understand things they don't. Think kids understand that there's a looming death, and then the child doesn't realize it. Mm-hmm. And then it all happens really fast, and then the person's gone, and they haven't really had a chance to take in what's happening. Mm-hmm. So I do think it's important to say, you know, look, your grandma's been sick. The doctors have done everything they can. There's nothing left to do. This illness will be, you know, what brings her to the end of her life. You know, just to be very straightforward. And then to say, what questions do you have for me? And to make space and time for kids to take that in. The other thing I would do is, before any conversation like this, is give kids a chance to brace themselves. To say to kids, I have really, really sad news about Nana that we need to share with you. Mm. And that sentence is a huge gift to kids. It is a huge sort of, you know, basically kiddo, brace yourself. Mm. And they will almost always know what's coming.
Wow.
But even that, you know, just that 5-second interval to kind of marshal their forces and brace themselves a little bit is a really kind thing to make possible.
Knowing that she's dying, how often should kids be expected to visit? Because it must be painful for them as it is for the parent.
It's a great question. So one is, I would follow the kid's lead. You know, I would absolutely follow the kid's lead. And they may say, great, we want to see her every day. And you say, okay, great, she wants to see you every day. I mean, I think that there's real value in letting kids lead the way. If a kid is like, let's say this isn't happening, like, I don't want any part of this, I don't want to see her sick, I think it gets a little more complicated, because there's two things you're trying to balance. You know, one is, what would the grandma want to have happen? You know, and how would she want to mm-hmm. be able to say goodbye or be close with her grandchildren and, you know, touch them and hug them and have that time? The other is, what will the kid be able to feel comfortable with in retrospect? Right? So if the child's like, I don't want to do this, or it feels too uncomfortable, I think there's room for the parent to say, I understand completely, and I want you to be able to look back on this time and feel comfortable with how it was handled. And I have a feeling that if you don't see her or say goodbye in a way that feels right, you're not going to feel okay about it later. And so we have to, let's see if we can come up with a solution that lets you do this.
Isn't that a lot to put on a kid's plate, to be like, how is this going to, how are you going to process this best? What do you want to do? And especially if grandma might not be the grandma that they remember and love, who could be fading, that's also traumatic, isn't it, to see that?
Yep. Yeah, no, Rena, you are 100% right. I mean, this is a real tension the parent's sitting in. But it gets to something else. And I would, this guidance to me feels really important, whether the kid's like, yep, I want to see her every day, or no, I'm feeling uncomfortable about it. We have to prepare kids for what they're going to see. And what the letter writer is saying is that right now, you know, she looks and seems pretty, you know, like familiar, like the grandmother they remember. But even if there's small adjustments, it's almost like saying, you know, giving that kid a chance to brace themselves when you're saying, I've got some really sad news. It is critically important that we say, okay, when you see grandma, you will notice that she has lost weight. Or when we're taking kids to hospital visits, you know, whether or not it's end of life visits, I have to tell you, Rena, hospitals, kids see a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. one thing I have learned clinically is, when I have really actually a client of any age, you know, who has been to the hospital to see a loved one, or who, you know, was in the hospital, I have learned to say, did you see things that were upsetting to you? And Rena, I cannot tell you how often the thing they saw in the hallway on the way into the room
mm-hmm.
where they were headed, or to walk into a room and to see a post-surgical parent who may have come through the surgery just fine, but is swollen in a way that's unexpected, or has tubes in places that are unexpected.
Yeah.
That piece, I can't overstate clinically how much I have come to appreciate that the visuals that sometimes go along with major medical procedures or end-of-life experiences are jarring to people in a way that we, I think, tend to kind of breeze right past.
Right.
And you know how, Rena, like, it's one thing to see the movie, it's another thing to read the book.
Yes.
You kind of can't unsee things.
Right, right.
So I would really put a lot of energy into preparing kids for what they're going to see at every step of the way, and then giving them some options of like, okay, I'm not ready for that, or I don't want to see that, or, you know, something in that way. But the visual piece, Rena, I cannot overstate how, also how hidden it becomes. It's amazing to me clinically, where I will, someone will come in, they'll talk about a grief experience or visiting someone in the hospital, worrying about their health. And then when I say, did you see anything that was upsetting? They'll be like, oh, I did. You know, and it's so clear. It was never going to come up any other way.
Mm.
But that was carrying as much weight to them as anything else that was going on.
Mm. I hadn't thought of that. Just something like tubes being intubated. Obviously, that's significant. But even just having an IV in an arm can be traumatizing, probably for kids who haven't seen that when we're used to
it. Yeah. And yeah, especially if they know the person, you know,
right,
if they know them really
right.
well, they're used to that person and their body, you know, then to suddenly see their body in such a different way it's a big deal.
Hmm. I want to ask you also about this mom, because helping a parent through the end is also a lot to take on emotionally, and you've got kids at home. What advice do you have for this mom who's probably going to be, the parent's going to be away helping care for grandma?
Yeah. You know, what it reminds me of is that, you know, when stressors go up, supports need to go up too.
Mm,
and so,
that's a good one.
Yeah, because sometimes the stressors can't be brought down. You know, if we can bring them down, we should bring them down. But sometimes you can't. And this is one of those moments. So I think I would really want any family in this position to up all the supports they can. So it may be that sometimes it's social support, you know, reaching out to friends who are not, you know, in the full face of the grief, but love this family, love the people in
yes.
it, and saying,
yes.
you know, we need your help. And, you know, Rena, you've got friends like this. I've got friends like this. Like, when it comes to the end of my parents' life, like, I know who I'm calling because
right.
they love us, but they don't have the same kind of skin in the game. And so
right.
they can be helpful. So that is huge. But also, Rena, one of the things I've become much more aware of is sometimes the supports are things like getting more takeout.
Oh, right. gosh. Amen to that. What a great point. So true.
You know?
I mean, just the basic survival of every day, getting through those. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Absolutely. So, you know, those kinds of things can make a difference. And then the other thing I would say is asking for what you need, right? So if you're like, I don't like takeout, but we really could use some decent food, then tell the people who love you, who are not in the middle of this, here's what we could really use. If you could coordinate to have some folks bring some stuff by and make sure we don't have too much or too little, that would make
yeah.
all the difference in the world. And what we have to remember in these moments is people want to help. And people don't always know what to do. And I watch individuals who are, you know, in the center of these very painful situations feel like, oh, well, I don't want to impose on anybody. And I'm like, no, it's the opposite. You
yeah.
know, they're desperate to be useful. You giving them explicit instruction about what will be useful to you is a gift to them. Like, give them that gift. So I would just say, as much support as this family can call on, they absolutely should.
You know, we're taught to say please and thank you, but we don't know what to do when somebody is grieving or dealing with a significant death. What do you think really helps?
One of the key things as we think about helping kids through grief is to keep those, the people they've lost alive through remembering them and doing things like, you know, when it's middle school graduation, say, oh, Nana, here's what Nana would be thinking right now. Or Nana is so proud of you wherever she is so proud of you. And to keep that ongoing presence is, for kids, a way that we don't forget what they've lost and we make the ongoing conversation about the person who we've loved, who we've lost, very normal, very natural to their days. And I think that's how, as parents or adults, we keep it from feeling strange or frightening or alarming, and just acknowledge, like, you missed her when she died, and you're going to miss her at your wedding, and you're going to miss her when your first child is born. And just to normalize that makes a huge difference in the sort of the long tail of grief.
Before we go, I want to ask you about the funeral, because I think so often parents don't know what you should tell your child about the funeral and how kids process that.
Oh boy, that is the truth. Okay, so when it comes to funerals, whoever's funeral it is, back to this point we've made a couple times today, preparation, preparation, preparation. Kids should know what they are walking into. And especially if it's one where there's options, kids should be given the option of whether or not they want to walk into it. And so when it comes to the question of whether children should go to funerals or getting kids ready for funerals, what we want to do as adults is to give them the total play-by-play, a complete account of what to expect, and especially if there's going to be a body on view. And because that is its own very, I mean, frankly, strange experience that kids will want to be prepared for. And, you know, this is also true for wakes. This is also true for other things. And so giving kids an entire account of what to expect makes it easier for them to bear, you know, everything that comes their way. And then there may be times where you want choice, right? You may say, we're not going to the wake because the casket will be closed after the wake. And, you know, I'm making the call that my child does not need to see the body. You also may give, you know, older kids an option. And then they may get to change their mind when they get there, you know. So I think, again, prepare, 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 let them know what to expect. Kids can handle an enormous amount if they know what's coming, but funerals are tricky. And the other thing we should prepare them for is there may be very upset people at the funeral. You know, so we're often so focused on the body and the, you know, whatever servicer, you know, kind of ceremony there will be and our own experience. But we need to say, oh, you know, your Nana's best friend will be there, and you should expect that she may really be very, very upset, and I want you to be prepared for that.
Mm. So to wrap it up, Lisa, on death and dying, what do you think your advice is to parents that they should keep in their mind as they're coping with this and trying to help their children through?
It's okay to be sad in front of your kids.
Mm.
And I think that's often what parents are most frightened of, is if I get upset, will that upset them? And I think if you get upset in a way that feels out of control, it probably will. But I think if you are weeping and talking about missing the person and feeling very sad, and they can see that, and they can see that you just take this in stride as part of how we process emotion, that will be a great gift to your child. And so don't be afraid of your own sadness or your child's sadness, and know that you can dip in and out of it and that you don't have to do it all at once.
You know, a friend of mine once said, grief is the price you pay for love.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can't have life without death.
So true. So absolutely true. Lisa, do you have any books that you can recommend for parents on dealing with grief?
Yeah, I think we kind of want to break it down by age. So for younger kids, there's some wonderful books. One's called The Fall of Freddy the Leaf. Another one's called The 10th Good Thing About Barney, about a dog. And Maria Shriver wrote a wonderful book called What is Heaven? And then there's not a huge adolescent literature, but there's some stuff that's for adults that may be useful to teens and younger kids.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a wonderful book called Grief Day by Day, which just lets people kind of deal with grief in kind of bite-sized pieces, as we say. I think that's an excellent resource. And then there's another book called The After Grief, about the long arc of bereavement. And I like the way in which it really appreciates that it takes a long, long time to get used to the idea of losing someone we love.
I think so often we think it gets better after 6 months to a year, and that it could live with you for your lifetime is something that I don't think we think about.
Yeah, no, and I think often it's almost setting in at 6 months to a year. And I think if we can change our thinking, we're better prepared for losses and we're better prepared to support people when they face them.
It's great advice. Thanks, Lisa. So Lisa, what do you have for us for Parenting to Go?
I think I want to underscore something that's come up several times today, which is preparing kids for hard things. I think sometimes, mm-hmm. We know something's going to be challenging, whether it's a funeral or, any variety of things that we expect our kids to do or want our kids to do. And we can get anxious knowing that it may be strange for them, whatever it is, whether it's a hospital visit or, anything along those lines, even going to the doctor themselves for something that's different from what they've usually done. And let's never forget the power of preparation to make challenging new things a lot easier for kids to manage.
It's great advice and so much to unpack here with grief. I want to thank you so much, Lisa. There's so much here that I think can be so helpful. And I want to tell everyone about our episode next week. We're going to talk about how do you help your teen deal with college rejections. I'll see you next week, Lisa.
I'll see you next week.
Thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Ask Lisa podcast so you get the episodes just as soon as they drop. And send us your questions to AskLisa at drlisademore.com. And now a word from our lawyers. The advice provided on this podcast does not constitute or serve as a substitute for professional psychological treatment, therapy, or other types of professional advice or intervention. If you have concerns about your child's well-being, consult a physician or mental health professional. If you're looking for additional resources, check out Lisa's website at drlisademore.com. We'll see you next week.